Well, our speaker is going to be Richard Webb, but before he comes, I'm going to read to you from Genesis chapter 8, verse 15, to chapter 9, verse 17. Genesis chapter 8, verse 15, to chapter 9, verse 17. Then God said to Noah, "Come out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons and their wives. Bring out every kind of living creature that is with you, the birds, the animals, and all the creatures that move along the ground, so they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful and increase in number on it." So Noah came out together with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives, all the animals and all the creatures that move along the ground, and all the birds, everything that moves on land, came out of the ark, one kind after another. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of all the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, "Never again will I curse the ground because of humans, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood. And never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease." Then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, and fill the earth. The fear and dread of you will fall on all the beasts of the earth, and on all the birds of the sky, on every creature that moves along the ground, and on all the fish in the sea. They are given into your hands. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything. But you must not eat meat that has its lifeblood still in it. And for your lifeblood, I will surely demand an accounting. I'll demand an accounting from every animal, and from each human being too. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed, for in the image of God has God made mankind. As for you, be fruitful and increase in number, multiply on the earth and increase upon it." Then God said to Noah and his sons with him, "I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth, I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be destroyed by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant I'm making between me and you, and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth, and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you, and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind on the earth." So God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all the life on the earth." And the Lord will add his blessing to the reading of his word. Now I'll hand over to Richard. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, everybody. It's nice to be here. Because I was originally booked when this thing called COVID suddenly emerged, and everything went to pot, didn't it? And fortunately, Steve managed to make communication with me earlier this year, and here I am now. It's really nice to be here. It's interesting, my grandfather will be absolutely chuffed that I'm here this morning. My grandfather, for those of you who are very, 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 very old, was Ben Griffiths. Anybody know him? Remember him? He lived over at Shanklin, and it's great to be here because I'm pretty sure that he preached here as well, and to be standing here in his footsteps is good. I want to talk to you today about covenants. We read there, Steve read for us, and God said, "This is the sign of the covenant I'm making with you, between me and you and every living creature. I have set my rainbow in the clouds." Have you got the picture there, Steve? I happened to be out sailing on Thursday this week, and there were some showers around, and then this astonishing, the picture doesn't do it justice, across the whole of the entrance to Cowes, there was this amazing double rainbow. And I thought, oh, that's quite interesting. That's what I'm going to be talking about on Sunday. Now, sometimes, you know, when you get invited to speak, they say, well, you know, speak what the Lord lays on your heart. Other times they say, well, this is the passage we would really like you to read and work on. And that's actually quite a challenge sometimes, is to go and see what God is speaking to you about through a particular passage. And what came out to me was to talk to you about covenants today. We all know the story about Noah, don't we? And the covenant and the rainbow. And each time we see the rainbow, I hope you actually say, that's a reminder of God's promise. It is a sad statement of today that unfortunately the rainbow has been hijacked as a sign by other people and the LGBT side of things. But we know that the rainbow is there, put there by God. So what is a covenant? A definition I found is that the concept of covenant is rooted in the idea of a promise or agreement between two parties where each party agrees to certain promises, stipulations, privileges and responsibilities. The covenant relationship is two-way or bilateral, meaning that both parties are bound together by the bond established through the covenant. This covenant, in the way that the Bible is talking about, is a mutual agreement between two parties, although in the biblical covenants we find it is God in his loving kindness who initiates them, despite us in many ways. Now, in the Western world anyway, we tend to think of covenants as a set of rules, not a relationship. You can see that there are various examples of covenants around. Now, for example, a different story altogether, but we're negotiating to buy some land for a community hub over in Chale. And it's got some restricted covenants on. The land was originally owned by the Anglican Church, and they sold it on to a housing association, and they put some restricted covenants on. The first was that you couldn't call anything on there a manse or a vicarage. The second thing was that you couldn't sell liquor on the land. And the third thing was that you couldn't put a permanent building on it. That's a covenant, but it was a covenant in the sense of a legal binding agreement. But in the Hebraic culture, a covenant has a deeper relationship meaning. It means to give the best to each other. It means there is a dedicated bond to each other. It means there is a shared inheritance to each other, and it means there's an agreement on the promises to each other. And God has initiated this promise with us. Now, can you think of instances in the Bible where other instances where covenants are mentioned? Okay, anybody got any things that come to mind straight away? Sorry? You jumped way ahead. Yes, very good. Sorry? Marriage, yes. Yeah. There are in fact four major ones before what we mentioned there, the Lord's Supper. The first one was Noah, obviously, we were talking about here. The second one, God made a covenant with Abraham. Abraham blessing his descendants in perpetuity. The third one was with Moses after the Exodus. God promised to make a covenant with the Israelites, and actually the Ten Commandments and everything came out from that as well. The fourth one was David, and he made a covenant with David and that his descendants were established as the royal heirs to the throne of the nation of Israel. So you've got Noah, Abraham, Moses, and then David. And the fifth one is the covenant with Christ. I found on YouTube's a great resource, a great video which explains it much better than I could. So Steve, you want to run the video, please?
If you've been around Christians, you've probably heard of the idea of having a personal relationship with God, which could mean different things in the Bible, like having God as a friend, or your father, or maybe your teacher.
But there's one particular way that the Bible talks about this relationship that you find all over. But strangely, we don't talk about it that much, and that's the idea of a partnership with God.
A partnership like working alongside someone to accomplish a goal together.
Right, and this is actually what you see at the beginning of the Bible. God creates this good world full of all of this potential. And then God appoints these unique creatures, humans, as his partners in bringing more and more goodness out of all that potential.
But the humans don't want to partner with God. They rebel and try to create a world on their own terms.
And so this broken partnership is the Bible's explanation for why we're stuck in a world of corruption and injustice and the tragedy of death.
It's not like there's just one or two humans who have bailed on this relationship. In the story of the Bible, everyone has abandoned the partnership with God.
So what God does is select a smaller group of people out of the many, and he makes a new partnership with them called a covenant. And in a covenant, God makes promises, and then in exchange asks his partner to fulfill certain commitments. And the purpose of all of this is to somehow use this covenant relationship to renew his partnership with everybody else.
Now, there are actually four times in the Old Testament that we're told God initiates a covenant relationship with Noah, Abraham, the nation of Israel, and King David.
And it's through these that God is forming a covenant family into which all people will eventually be invited.
So let's see how these work. The first one is with Noah.
So in this story, God has just brought the flood to cleanse the world of humanity's corruption, and Noah and his family are the only ones left. And so God makes a covenant with Noah, saying, "Listen, I know that humans will continue to be evil, but despite that, I'm not going to destroy it like this again. Instead, the earth will be this reliable place for us to work together."
Great. So what does Noah have to do?
Nothing. And that's what's so interesting about this first covenant, is that God is promising to be faithful, even though he knows humans won't be.
The next time we see God make a covenant is with a man named Abraham. God chooses him, promises to bless him, give him a large family, lots of land where they can flourish.
And in return, God asks Abraham to trust him and train up his family to do what is right and just. And the whole reason for this covenant is God says that somehow he's going to bring his blessing to all families of the world through this one family.
So that's Abraham. The next time we see God make a covenant is when Abraham's family grows into the tribe of Israel.
And this covenant is with the whole tribe. God asks them to obey a set of laws, which are these guidelines for living well as a community of God's partners. And if they do this, then God promises to bless them and that they will become a people who then represent him to the rest of humanity.
That's the covenant with Israel. The last covenant is with King David.
Yeah, the tribe of Israel has become this large nation, ruled by David. And God asked David and his descendants to partner with him by leading Israel in obeying the laws and doing what is right and just. And God promises that one day, one of David's sons will come and extend God's kingdom of peace and blessing over all the nations.
So those are the four covenants that God makes in order to restore his partnership with the whole world.
But here's what happens. Israel breaks the covenant. They worship other gods, they allow horrible injustice, and so they lose their land and are forced off into exile.
So it seems hopeless. But during this time, Israel's prophets talked about a day when God would restore these covenants in spite of Israel's failure, somehow.
Yeah, they called it the New Covenant. And this is actually what's so interesting about Jesus, is that he's introduced into this story as the one who fulfills all of these covenant relationships. We're told that he's from the family of Abraham, and so he will bring the blessings of that family to the whole world. We're told that he's the faithful Israelite who is able to truly obey the law. And we're told that he's the king from the line of David, and so he goes about extending God's kingdom of justice and peace to all.
And that's really remarkable for one guy.
Yeah, and what it highlights is perhaps the most surprising claim of all made about this man, that Jesus is no mere human, but rather God become human. And God did this in order to be that faithful covenant partner that we are all made to be, but have failed to be. And so through Jesus, God has opened up a way for anyone to be in a renewed partnership with him.
So Jesus calls people to follow him and become part of this new covenant family.
And despite their failures, Jesus is committed to making them into partners who are becoming more and more faithful.
The story of the Bible ends with a vision of a fully renewed world, full of goodness and peace.
And there's this renewed humanity there, partnering together with God to expand the goodness of his creation. And so the end of the Bible story is really a new beginning.
Do you get the picture there? That each of those covenants were stepping stones. That the culmination was the arrival of Christ and the new covenant he establishes with us. We read in Hebrews, "For this reason, Christ is the mediator of a new covenant, that those who are called may receive the promised inheritance, now that he has died as a ransom to set them free from the sins committed under the first covenant." In Luke 22, it says, and this is a reminder, "In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you.'" And we do say, don't we, the Lord's Supper, it's a reminder, as often as you do this. In 1 Corinthians we say, "In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me.'" And in Hebrews 9, verse 22, it says, "In fact, the law, the old covenant, requires that nearly everything be cleansed with blood, and without the shedding of blood there is no forgiveness." Why? Why did Jesus make this new covenant through his death, through the shedding of his blood? Now, you notice the covenants, there was a goal. There's a commitment, a partnership between the goal. And I think in the new covenant, or in those covenants, you see the pathway through to a common goal. And we got it in John 3:16. Because "for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life." And at the end of Jesus' time on the earth, he passed on to his disciples the task of spreading the good news of this new covenant. What Hebrews describes in Hebrews 10 as this new and living way. In Matthew 28, Jesus says, "All authority on heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." This commission has been passed down to us as his disciples. How do we fulfill this commission and share this news about this new covenant? I just want to talk to you about one thing that Jesus talked about as that we are supposed to be. In Matthew 5, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. We, you and me, we are called to be salt and light. How do we do this? Can you put up the next picture, Steve? Jesus talks about we are the salt. Where do you keep salt? Answer, in a salt cellar. Now, salt has two main uses. Firstly, as a preservative. It stops food from going bad. And secondly, as a seasoning. Despite what the government says about you can't have salt on your food, in fact, if you put a little bit of salt on your food, it tastes a lot better, doesn't it? Okay? You can say yes, we're not politically correct here. So when Jesus talks about us being salt, we're there to stop things from going bad. That's a preservative. And how do we influence for good to maintain the whole wholesomeness of life? And we are here as seasoning. The message, I hope you've got the Message translation, because it's a great modern take on the scriptures. This is what it translates, that verse about salt and light. Let me tell you why you are here. You are here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? If you've lost your usefulness, you've lost your usefulness and will end up in the rubbish bin. So what are the God flavors? It's interesting, though, you've got them up there. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and gentleness and self-control. Against such there is no law. We are to be practicing that in our everyday lives. Now let's turn to the other image that Jesus used, which is light. Now we know light shows the way. In the Bible, when light is discussed, it is proved to remove darkness and evil activities. Light is what brightens all believers' pathways and offers them a hope for a better tomorrow. Now, as an example of this, I want to give you... It's there already. Anybody recognise where that is? St. Catherine's Point. Yeah. Now, did you know the purpose of lighthouses is to serve as an aid to maritime coastal navigation, warning mariners of hazards, establishing their position and guiding them to their destinations? I think you could actually flip that easily, couldn't you, to a spiritual analogy about guiding people, warning the hazards, establishing their position and guiding them to their destination. So it's two things. It's a navigational aid and a warning. Did you know, some of you may be sailors and know this, St. Catherine's has a flash of light every 5 seconds. This flashing sequence is unique to St. Catherine's. So wherever you are out to sea, if you have a chart, you can take a bearing on the lighthouse and you will work out where you are. And we are to be a light shining out, guiding people in the journey of life to help them navigate safely. But did you know, second picture, St. Catherine's has a second light. It's a red light shining out as a narrow beam to the west. If you sail from the Needles towards St. Catherine's, there are a reef of rocks coming out from the coast there called the Atherfield Ledge. If, as you're coming along, you can see the red light, you're heading for the reef. And actually, if any sailor sees it, they immediately steer out to sea. And we are here to warn people of dangers of following a course of action that will end up with them on the rocks. Now, if we are the salt, you could say that our church is a salt cellar. And in fact, like in real life, salt cellars come in all shapes and forms, don't they? So the churches come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. However, for the salt to do its good and its job, it has to be tipped out of the salt cellar. It may look good inside the salt cellar, but it is no use whatsoever. It needs to be, for preservative, it needs to be rubbed in. And if it's bringing out the seasoning, you've got to add it to whatever you've got. It's no good if it stays in the cellar, i.e., if we just stay inside the church, we ain't doing what we're supposed to be doing as salt. So how are we both individually and as a church being tipped out and rubbed into the things of this world to preserve and bring out God flavours? Equally, you do not hide your light. Here's what Jesus says in the Message translation. I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house, be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up to God, this generous Father in heaven. That's quite a challenge, isn't it? So how bright are you? How are we shining out? Going back to Hebrews, I love Hebrews because it's a nice logical book and really comes through. In Hebrews 10, the writer has explained, just in the before the verses I'm doing, explains the new covenant and then goes on to say, because of this new covenant, therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with the full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. This is the key. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful, and let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching. We had this new and living way. So in the covenant of Genesis, the covenant in Genesis was the start of a covenant trail that climaxes in the new covenant we have through Jesus' death and resurrection on the cross and the life that we have in Christ. We're challenged in Hebrews, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess. For he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on to love and good works. So as we come to communion in a minute, we celebrate this new covenant. But the challenge is to get out of the salt cellar, climb onto the light stand, and stir each other up to love and good works.